Spirit Blade Underground, episode 284. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for System 5. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 284.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and very unique community you're invited to check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, where we produce entertainment and resources designed to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more information and free goodies, check out spiritblade.net. On the show today, part two of our interview with the Game Store Prophets and a review of the premiere episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Plus, our first look at the Tabernacle of Ancient Israel and what it reveals about God. All right, let's get to it. Well, first I want to apologize if this review feels a little bit scattered. I wrote it, and but it's not been like edited, and like so my thoughts might be a little bit out of sequence and stuff like that. Recently, I'm very grateful. Kim Wick came on board from the Christian Geek Central community to take over basically editing chores for all the material that's posted to ChristianGeekCentral.com, including my own material. And so now I might be extra prone to misread my words, especially if I have bad spelling errors. Sorry, Kim. But she's doing an awesome job. So if my stream of thoughts seem a little bit out of sequence, the written review will be up soon at ChristianGeekCentral.com, and you can read something that flows a little bit better, probably. So anyway, okay. So I've really enjoyed all of the Marvel movies since Marvel took control of their properties. And when it was announced that ABC would run a weekly TV series set in the cinematic Marvel universe, well, fans like me sat bolt upright and took notice. And when it was further announced that Agent Phil Coulson of S.H.I.E.L.D., played by Clark Gregg, would be resurrected to join the cast, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. suddenly became the most hotly anticipated fall TV show among the widest spectrum of geeks, myself included. And with Joss Whedon, the writer and director of the Avengers movie, on board to create the series, it was sure to be amazing, right? Well, the story opens with Grant Ward, a skilled young agent, being transferred, presumably, it seems to me, against his will, into a higher security division of the S.H.I.E.L.D. organization that focuses on investigating and containing potential superhuman threats. Grant is young, presumably attractive, and has a bit of a rogue streak, and that's about all there is to him. Skye is a conspiracy theorist hacker who lives in her van and has dedicated her life to uncovering superhuman matters that the government doesn't want in the public eye. She has a somewhat nervous, self-deprecating personality and is probably meant to be a quirky character. But the fact that she has the looks of a Hollywood leading lady, the shampoo commercial hair to match, and makeup and clothes that give her an attractive, well-groomed appearance combats the quirky feel the script is attempting to give her. There are a few other characters in the ensemble cast that haven't had much time to shine yet, but have hints of potentially interesting character traits. However, one of the biggest problems with the show is casting and costume and makeup design. The show could have done itself many favors by casting more character actors in the roles that are meant to be strange and interesting instead of the standard leading actor types that were used here. In really, I gotta say, all of the ensemble cast, which has a number of quirky characters, but it just seems like they could have cast somebody different, or they could have costumed or make-upped these people differently in order to play up their quirkiness, their unusualness. But instead, it's like, let's make everyone look as good as they can possibly look, you know, and that's, you know, just that standard kind of TV gloss they spray on everybody before they go on set, you know. Maybe they felt they had enough, in the character acting department already, with Clark Gregg leading the cast. And if that was their thinking, it's tough to be hard on them for their mistake. Gregg does great things with every line he's given, elevating the material whenever he opens his mouth. He's both funny and humble, as we know Coulson to be from the movies, and also surprisingly commanding and firm when the situation calls for it. I'm very interested in Coulson, more so than, I mean, I was in the movies, but I'm very interested in finding out who he is, what makes him tick. There's a little bit of a mystery subplot that's introduced in the first one, you know, that implies that the S.H.I.E.L.D. organization is keeping some pretty huge information from Coulson that he's completely in the dark about. So I'm really interested in what that will do to his character as, you know, as that information is slowly leaked to him, or suddenly revealed all at once, as I'm sure is one of those things is going to happen at some point. So my hope is that the show will lean more toward a Coulson-centric affair as time passes, at least for as long as it takes to figure out how to make Sky more believable and Grant more interesting. But in reality, Sky and Grant have already clearly been set up for a formulaic comedic romance subplot that will start with them hating each other until they realize their true feelings for one another, masked behind the confusing rage of their hormones, and decide to couple up in hopes of securing ratings during Sweeps Week. Guest performances are all nicely done, which bodes well for the revolving door of guest cast members the show will employ. The story has some nice nods to multiple aspects of Marvel movie continuity, including the recent Iron Man 3, which surprised me that they were that up to date. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly they incorporate the events of Thor: The Dark World after its release in November. I'll be very interested to see, you know, how quickly those events show up in this TV show. I suspect hardcore Marvel fans will have plenty of reasons to come back to S.H.I.E.L.D. each week based on the nerd candy of continuity references alone. A lot to enjoy there for fans. Visual effects and fight sequences were executed well, with only a few instances of a TV budget being glaringly obvious. So very well done in this department. From a pure action-adventure standpoint, I think the show will live up to the Marvel movie legacy, although on a smaller scale. I've got a buddy who's like, you know, he kind of like, you know, smiles at me patiently when I kind of talk about my thoughts on movies and why I think they're good or not good or whatever, you know. And he says, you know, my scale is pretty simple. Was I entertained? You know, and I think for guys like that, I mean, are just content with action that looks cool and is fun, that this is going to be an enjoyable show they're going to want to come back to week after week, especially the way it's set in such a widely enjoyed universe. The script is a mix of good and bad. There were some nice plot turns that I didn't see coming, but the dialogue is filled with jokes that fall flat most of the time. I would say 50% of the jokes were good, but the problem is, you know, the others are duds, and the ones that are good were delivered, you know, in a very uninspired way, I think, by the cast. As far as the premiere episode of this series goes, there was very little, I've got to say, that's likely to leave viewers contemplating moral or spiritual issues. Sure, there are, you know, the basic moral dilemmas you find all over the place in fiction, and something is better than nothing. You know, not that fiction has to have, I should, you know, kind of clarify, not that fiction is bad or something if it doesn't go into, you know, deeper philosophical or moral, ethical, whatever, spiritual issues, you know. But coming away from this premiere, I think most people will be thinking about, you know, secret agents and people with superpowers rather than whether or not Thor is really technically a god, which was brought up, that was a little bit interesting, or how far one should go to protect his own family, which I think was a theme in this story. But it's I just don't think it's gonna, you know, you can dig and find those things. It's not that, you know, because I know, you know, sometimes when I review stuff, you know, people are like, oh, Peter, I think there was some really rich stuff here that jumped out, you know, and man, that's awesome, you know, or some people say, you know, if you look at it this way, you know, then you can see it, you know. My the way I hold score is just my impression of what I think most people, you know, will be thinking about, how likely the average person is. And, you know, I'm you know, certainly, you know, not like this super uber, you know, detector of that. It's just kind of my impressions, and you guys can tell me if I'm generally on or off in that regard. Let's see here. Okay, so if you're a geek that has time for lots of TV in your life, well, then this is a show for geeks that have lots of time for TV. You're going to want to check out S.H.I.E.L.D., especially since most shows of this kind that last only get better. And I think that'll be the case with S.H.I.E.L.D. It's getting off to kind of a mixed bag, rocky start with me. But if it doesn't get canceled, at the end of its first season. I think season two will be better. And if it makes it past season two, I think season three will be better. That's just kind of my impression of these kinds of shows. They get better, not worse, as time goes on. You know, they might have the odd bad last season or conclusion to their saga, Battlestar Galactica. But, you know, generally they get better, not worse, I think. But if you're like me and you only have time for nerdy TV masterpieces like Farscape, Battlestar Galactica, The Walking Dead, well, this show isn't even in the same ballpark of quality. Though, it may get there in time. I give it a quality of 7.5 out of 10 and a relevance of 6.0 out of 10.
The future. A world where the quest for truth is a thing of the past.
Look, your truth just isn't true for me, okay?
The truth does not require your belief. It simply is, regardless of your personal convictions.
I think the world's been blinded, Ebony. Everybody claims to be spiritual, whatever the drac that means, but nobody really knows anything about the spiritual world.
Merrick, this is crazy. You can't talk like this.
And they'll do anything to keep it out of our future.
It's Atlantis! They found us again!
An alien race has blessed us with amazing technology.
Merrick, the world we live in is incredible.
While a race of demons destroys who we are.
Do you believe in the supernatural, Mr. Vandarius?
We shall bathe in your blood, you.
Brothers, tonight marks the end of our subjection to the only. Humanity will be wiped from the map of history.
We've traveled across our world and even into another.
What we can see with our eyes is of little consequence in the grand scheme of things. It is what occurs in the other world around us that should have us concerned.
What the press just happened? Was that the other world?
We've been hunted by humans, aliens, and things I don't have a name for.
I'm the future, Vincent. The ultimate life form.
There's too many of them! One goes down and three more take its place!
All because we're looking for the one weapon that can bring an end to this conflict forever.
Give me the sword!
A weapon known only as the Spirit Blade.
Oh, I can feel its power from here!
Oh yeah? Well, tell me what this feels like.
For more information, visit spiritblade.net.
Okay, so you guys are like, you know, game store prophets, so you're big into games, tabletop games. So give me, you know, two or three, each of you, give me two or three tabletop games that you really love. I'm not going to put the pressure on you to say your two or three favorite, just two or three that come to mind.
That can't happen. I would ask you in what genre.
You
go first, Luke. I need some time to narrow this down.
Yeah, well, I can go with the easy one. You know, there are multiple kinds of tabletop games. And so people maybe they might not even know what we're talking about necessarily when we say tabletop games, because there's such a wide variety.
Yeah,
true. It does cover a large berth there.
You know, I think a lot of people might think of games like Magic the Gathering, which is a card game.
Yeah,
and it's a collectible card game, and you can go to almost any game store, and there will be like one half of the game store is just a bazillion teenage boys who are all like flipping these cards around like you wouldn't believe. But there are other kind of games we call hobby board games. And so they're board games that are – they're just a little bit more intense than the board game you might pick up at Target, though there are a lot more hobby board games in Target now than there used to be. And then also there is tabletop war games. So maybe back in the day you might have had a Games Workshop store in your mall. I know I did growing up.
Thankfully, I didn't, because I'd have been in debt up to my eyeballs to this day if I had one.
And so for me, that was my first love. I came to board games through tabletop war gaming. And my war game of choice at the moment is, well, I guess it's two. I play a game called Battletech.
Okay.
And then I play a game that I called Flames of War that I've just gotten into maybe 6 months, in the last 6 months. And then in terms of board games, like Mike said, that's really, really hard. I guess the game that I kind of enjoy most to just sit down and play with with kind of any group of people is a game called Pandemic.
And oh, okay, yeah.
I really enjoy games. Pandemic is a cooperative game. So you're not playing against one another. You're playing against the game. And I really enjoy games like that. Pandemic, Forbidden Island, Elder Signs. I really like those kind of games where you're working as a team. Like a storytelling game where maybe you're working against each other, but you're creating something together. And that kind of teamwork vibe thing that happens with six or eight people around a table, I think is a real good bonding thing. And you kind of get to know people very, very intimately, very quickly by playing these kind of games.
How about you, Mike? Right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I have to list a role-playing game, and sadly, it's no longer D&D. I have hope for D&D next, but it, you know, fourth edition kind of burned me. But I think, you know, just to not get into edition wars, because unless you're a role player, then you have no idea what the heck these numbers I'm talking about even mean. I'll say D&D as a whole.
Okay.
I started playing D&D when I was 16, which was, you know, I was very thankful that the 80s had already gone by. The true, like, core of the D&D hate had already kind of started to fade out.
Yeah.
So I didn't really feel that. And I got into it with a buddy of mine. And I think the greatest part about D&D to me, and this applies to all role-playing games, is just the idea that everything lives in your head. And when you're playing it right, quite frankly, everything is able to be done. There is no, like, when you're playing video games, in fact, I just heard a podcast where somebody was talking about this. I mentioned Bioshock Infinite. If you are a role player and you're playing a game like Bioshock Infinite, you look down an alley and you go, I want to go down that alley. But they didn't program that alley, so you can't go down it.
Yeah.
But as a role player, you can go, all right, let's go down that. And I think some of the best experiences I've had with role-playing games were the stuff that nobody planned. Like, whether I'm the game master or a player, when you get to that moment where, oh my goodness, we are literally flying on the seat of our pants because no one thought about somebody asking to do this, that's when the cool stuff happens. So I love that kind of game. I'm looking forward to. I just got the Firefly role playing game, Gaming in the Verse.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to getting my Monty Cook's Numenera Kickstarter in the mail. But kind of going back to the board gaming stuff and away from the role playing, I think probably one of my favorite games, as long as it's with the right crowd, and I'll explain in a second what that means, is a card game called Once Upon a Time.
Oh, okay.
And Once Upon a Time, Luke kind of mentioned, it's a storytelling game where you're playing cards that reveal a story. And the goal of the game is to play all the cards in your hand and get to an end line, which you've been given at the beginning of the game. So you know what your ending is before the story happens.
Okay.
The reason that it's one of my favorite games, it would be my favorite game except for the fact that you have to play with people who don't want to win.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking to play with people who want to win as opposed to want to play, it becomes, there was a man and he was by a tree when there was a sword there and he killed a giant, the end. And it's awful. But if you're doing it right, like the last time I played it, my buddy and I kind of went back and forth on telling the story, but there were like seven of us playing and it was just he and I. And at one point, I just stopped. I became the storyteller, and I just stopped, and I said, guys, I'm really sorry if this is boring. You know, Wes and I are just on a roll. And this one woman that I'd been playing with, she literally put her cards down and said, shut up and keep telling the story. So I love that. Speaking of card games, I just played for the first time a game that's been around for a while, but I just got around to playing it, and I love it. It's called Ascension.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It is a deck-building card game where you're basically building up your armies and your people and your equipment to go out and kill monsters and kind of be the hero. And I hadn't played it until Gen Con. I played a game of it, and I immediately went up to the desk and said, I've never played this game before this weekend. What is the first set that I need to buy, because I'm going to be buying it from you?
At the risk of going off into a tangent, You didn't happen to get a copy of the Pathfinder card game at Gen Con, did you?
Oh, sweet Lord, no.
Oh, no? That doesn't interest you?
No, it does interest me, but unless you were in the first throng of the 50,000 people that rushed the gates, you didn't get it.
Okay.
If there's one thing I discovered at Gen Con is that if there's something new, especially if that something new doesn't hit stores for a while, it's gone within hours.
See, that's crazy. That must be like something that's changed recently. Or maybe it just... Well, I was there in 2008. It's the only time I've been to Gen Con. Maybe it wasn't very highly anticipated, but I was a big Descent fan, and the expansion that I was looking for, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I can't remember now. Tomb of Ice, that's right. They had it there like... It was like 4 to 6 months before it was going to hit stores, unlike Pathfinder, which is coming out, you know, at the end of this month or something like that.
It's coming out like in a week or two.
Yeah. But I guess that it was expansion versus, you know, a completely new game.
Well,
so
I think that part of it was like the Firefly game was next to impossible to get.
Hmm.
Again, because like I saw people walking out with 2, 3, and 4 copies of that game. So,
wow.
I mean, it craziness ensues. I've discovered that I really don't care enough about getting it first.
Yeah.
To stand in line for 2 hours?
To stand in line for 2 hours and ruin my day just standing there.
Yeah.
When if I'm patient, I can get it with the rest of the people.
Yeah.
I'm not real big on the con exclusives. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the games that I got that had them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to be like, you know, punching teenagers to go get them. And I mean, I went.
There are so many other reasons to punch
a teenager. Stop that! Just because you haven't worked with youth, calm down.
I have. It's just been 20 years.
It's just been a long time. I did not get a chance to even play, even to get into the demo.
Oh, wow.
Of the Pathfinder game it just took way too long. I'm like, I could be playing 2 and 3 games, or I could be at the booth talking to people about Jesus. I do not need to be standing here to play this game. So, sadly, I mean, the other reason was is that I looked at the table, and I'm like, that looks like it could be fun, but man, it also looks like it could be very complicated.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's something to be said about having a game that will actually see time on your table.
Yes. Very true. Very true. Now, as you guys kind of look ahead in your imagination machines, what do you hope to do with game store profits in the future?
Luke, you want to field that one?
Yeah, we're actually in the process of doing that right now. At the moment, it's we have a project codenamed Project Awesome.
Project Awesome. It has not been revealed, but it will be revealed soon.
Ooh.
We have a team of people working on it, and we are going to be pretty radically expanding our ministry.
Cool.
And so that is coming. And so, you know, it was interesting. We'd done the show for, I don't know, a year, two. I don't even know how long it had been.
It was 2 years. Right around.
And, you know, we were happy doing the show. Nothing significant in terms of, like, our disgruntledness or anything like that.
And
I just kind of started feeling God speaking to me and kind of just, you know, one of those things where just sort of God was whispering in the back of my mind. And after a little bit of time kind of listening, I think I texted Mike and I said, hey, you know what? I really feel like God's asking me to move this thing on a little bit farther. And so I think that's something I want to do, and of course I want you to be there and doing it with me.
So flipping to the other side of this story, I happen to be, you know, really content doing the show, really enjoyed doing it, and I kind of felt the, you know, I think Game Store Profits can actually be something. We have, you know, we've been doing this for 2 years, we have an audience, we're in like, what was it, Luke? Like, last time we checked, we were, like, 15 different countries.
It's more than that, but it's a lot.
Yeah. Great. This was at the time we were talking about it. And, and I'm just like, you know, maybe I've found out that, because I was neck deep in trying to find a job in a church at this point. Like, I've been doing ministry solid for, like, I can't even tell you how long, but the actual process of having somebody pay me for it, instead of me just doing it, you know,
sure,
and hoping that somebody would maybe throw me a bone here and there, was proving to be difficult. And I said, you know what? I really think that whole process is draining me. But every time I sit down to talk about games and how games can be something that God uses to impact the lives of people, and how the gaming table brings fellowship that even some churches have a hard time setting up.
Yeah.
I started saying, you know, I really think this could be something more. And as soon as I started saying, gosh, I really think this could be something, Luke texts me and says, I really think God's telling me that this could be something.
Mm.
So completely opposite ends of the country, not talking to each other about it at all, we both came to the same conclusion, and we both kind of said, you know what, I think this must be a God thing.
Mm. That's awesome. When can we expect some kind of an announcement from you guys about the nature of Project Awesome?
Well,
I'd say this fall.
Yeah, the main thrust of things would be by the fall. I'm hoping that we won't be. I'm hoping that I can get the YouTube channel up and running within the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And once the YouTube channel goes live, that's probably going to be the vanguard of what we do.
Okay.
With
cool.
the site proper coming up behind that.
Cool.
But we'll be able to stop calling it Project Awesome when I do that, because the very first video that I made was calling it by name. So it's kind of hard to keep the name secret when there's a video of me explaining what it is.
Great. Well, I hope that you will you'll shoot me an email when that first video goes live, so I can point people to it, because whatever it is, I'm guessing it's going to be something of quality, something that I'll want to draw attention to. Meantime, where can people find you and follow what you guys are doing?
The big one is going to be GameStoreProfits.com. It's our website. Probably even when the main site goes live, we're still probably going to hold on to GameStoreProfits.com.
Okay.
You can also find us. We're on iTunes, and if you're listening and you like us and you know like what we do, we encourage people. We don't demand it. We encourage people to go onto iTunes and give us good ratings and reviews, not because we need to feel good about ourselves, but because we're kind of a podcast that's a niche within a niche.
Mm.
And so it's kind of hard for people to find us if they're not looking for us.
Sure.
So if we can get people to review and five-star us, we go higher and higher up the ladder.
Yeah.
So we'd love it if people would do that. We're also on Stitcher Radio, which is an app for – I believe it's on both Android and Apple devices.
Okay.
And that's just a place to get podcasts. So we're on there as well. If you look up Game Store Profits, we're on there.
Great. Cool.
For us, a big push for us is always our Facebook page, facebook.com/GameStoreProfits.
Okay.
I think that has been one of the bigger blessings for me, just because at first it was literally just me, just plastering every geeky thing I could find on our Facebook page. And slowly but surely, as the years have kind of gone by and we've been encouraging people to participate with us in that, we've got a lot of people who post other stuff. We've got I usually cite one woman, her name's Heather, and she sent us stories about how she had never really done gaming or role-playing with anything, and now she's DMing a D&D game for her son and his friends.
Oh, cool.
Like, stuff like that. We get to hear all about that on our Facebook page, so that's definitely a huge place to find us.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Luke and Mike, thank you guys so much for carving out time for me. I really appreciate what you guys are doing, and I will look forward to seeing where you guys go with it all next.
Thanks for having us.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language we take for granted, using a little cultural history and linguistics now and then to try and get at the heart of the text, so we can hopefully see and apply at least some of what God has for us in these words today. This time we're looking at Exodus chapter 25, really the entire chapter here. Now, because of the length of the material, this time I'm actually not going to read the entire chapter to you guys. Plus, it's a lot of kind of like organizational procedural details that I don't think would be very captivating listening. But I want to encourage you either, you know, before, you know, pause this now and read it yourself, Exodus 25, or check it out soon afterward so you can kind of reflect back on kind of my thoughts and kind of see maybe where I was coming from. Really, you know, at the end of putting this week's material together for this segment, I've just felt like, oh man, I barely scratched the surface. But if I was going to really go into this like I did a number of years ago, around the time I was leading worship, I just kind of wanted to dissect, you know, worship in the Old Testament, see what principles I could pull from that and apply to the way we approach corporate worship today. And I really dug in, and unfortunately, I didn't keep any notes. It was just kind of like, you know, my own study that I was just kind of doing in my head. I really should have taken notes. But anyway, I would recommend that you sometime just tackle Exodus or tackle Leviticus and just say, you know what, I'm just, if nothing else, just with your Bible and with a good study Bible that just has, you know, study notes in it, you know, maybe not like a life application type one or like an archaeology type one, but just a general, you know, study Bible. And because usually they'll have some kind of background information and stuff like that, and that's helpful. And it's, man, if you just understand kind of the basics of what's going on in these Old Testament rituals, it really expands your view of God. It brings new rich layers to the New Testament, and I think we're going to see that after we're finished looking at this kind of survey of this Old Testament material, and we go back to the New Testament and look at the book of Hebrews. I think that what we've done here will pay off when we get into Hebrews in I don't know, a few weeks, a month maybe. So anyway, at this point, we're now entering the final phase of our overview of the Old Testament law. In the next few weeks, we'll look at the sacrificial system instituted by Yahweh for the people of Israel. Yahweh, by the way, being God's personal name, which is translated in Moses' first encounter as I am. And whenever you see all caps, L-O-R-D, all caps, that's a replacement for God's personal name, Yahweh, which effectively means I am, or I am that I am. So anyway, just a reminder about that, if I haven't mentioned that in a while, it can be kind of weird and strange. You know, who the crap is Yahweh? So anyway, the Old Testament sacrifices are among the strangest parts of the Bible when viewed from the perspective of, you know, the average modern American. But when we look at them in their original cultural context, or at least attempt to, they begin to reveal on multiple levels who God is and what an amazing thing it is that he enables humans to have relationship with him. So first, my thoughts on Exodus 25, verses 1 through 9. Again, I'm not going to read this, but that's just for your point of reference. Exodus 25, 1 through 9. The tabernacle was made from precious materials donated by those who voluntarily desired to help provide the resources. Aside from the obviously valuable minerals, material included wood that would be especially durable and cloth in colors associated with royalty. Spices for anointing oil and incense were used to eliminate any mundane smells, just any kind of like, you know, the smells of the normal camp and all that kind of stuff, you know, just and create a completely different sensory atmosphere to help mark this as a place that is set apart for the purposes of God, so that when people enter the tabernacle, they'll have this sense that I am in a different place. I am in a holy place, we would say. Holy means set apart for the purposes of Yahweh. The word tabernacle means dwelling place. Although sacrifices were made in this place, they were ultimately made in service to the construct's primary purpose, and that is to be a dwelling place for God among his people. So in the construction of the tabernacle, which served as predecessor to the temple, we can see again the desire of a holy, just this other being, this holy, perfect, other, incomparable God. We see his desire to be with the people he loves while still holding true to justice, uncompromisingly true to justice. Until justice could be provided in full, there were evils among the Israelites that kept Yahweh from being able to justifiably have true intimacy with them. But in the meantime, the tabernacle and sacrificial system were a strong indication, I think, that God wanted to have a restored relationship with humans. Now, looking at verses 10 through 22, looking at the ark here, the Ark of the Covenant was a large chest overlaid with gold and equipped with large rings through which support poles could be inserted so that it could be carried without actually being touched. The lid was called the atonement cover, or you may see in your Bible it called the mercy seat, and it featured two sculptures of angelic beings facing each other with their wings overshadowing the atonement cover. The place in between them is where Yahweh said he would meet with Moses and provide commands for Israel. Just a little quote here from the IVP Bible Background Commentary that I found useful, the commentary on the Old Testament. The combination of cherubim as throne guardians, chests as footstools, and statements in the Old Testament concerning Yahweh being enthroned on the cherubim, such as 1 Samuel 4:4, supports the concept of the ark as representing the invisible throne of Yahweh. And that's from the IVP Bible Background Commentary on the Old Testament, InterVarsity Press, page 106. In the ark, I think we see God's nearness in allowing his symbolic throne to be carried by his people. But we also see that the relationship is dysfunctional in some way, since the ark was not to be touched. So it wasn't this completely familiar relationship. There's a desire to be near his people, but there are still these boundaries that that God clearly wants to exist. The Hebrew word for atonement cover is based on a verb meaning to ransom or deliver by means of a substitute, which I found really interesting. This is the revealing answer for how God can be both perfectly loving and perfectly just. So he doesn't slack off when it comes to justice. Wrongs must be dealt with and compensated for without exception. He's uncompromising when it comes to justice. But in his love, God allows for punishment to be carried out on a substitute rather than directly on the objects of his love. All right, looking at now Exodus 25, verses 23 through 30. We see this table business going on, all these kind of props and things. The table being talked about here was also an extremely holy object, indicated by the rings included in its design so that it also could be carried by poles without any human having to touch it. Golden plates were made to place the showbread or bread of the presence on. These 12 loaves of bread, replaced on the table freshly each Sabbath, seem to have represented the crops of the 12 tribes of Israel, and the fact that Yahweh is the source of life and prosperity for all of Israel. The offering served at least in part as a memorial of how Yahweh provided for the needs of the people. Look at this little bit of wording talking about the table and the bread of the presence in Leviticus chapter 24, verses 5 through 8. It says, "You shall take fine flour and bake 12 loaves from it." These are Yahweh's instructions. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each loaf, and you shall set them in two piles, 6 in a pile, on the table of pure gold before Yahweh. And you shall put pure frankincense on each pile that it may go with the bread as a memorial portion as a food offering to Yahweh. Every Sabbath day Aaron shall arrange it before Yahweh regularly. It is from the people of Israel as a covenant forever. So a memorial from the people. Looking at Exodus 25, verses 31 through 40 now, the lampstand, or menorah, as you and I would know of it more commonly, this one had seven I don't want to say candlesticks because they weren't candles. They were like little kind of lamps, little flames, you know, that were lit by oil in it. But it had seven of those instead of, I believe, the nine that is common to Jewish homes today. So anyway, the lampstand, the menorah, was made of pure gold, fashioned after an almond tree, the first tree to blossom each spring in the Near East. The menorah provided illumination for the structure inside the tabernacle, which was called the holy place, which contained the table, the bread of the presence, and the altar of incense. The purpose of the menorah was both practical and symbolic. the significance of the almond tree and its connection to the menorah, I'm sorry to say, is still a mystery to me, as the suggested symbolism I've read about to this point in kind of prepping for this week has been interesting, but far from conclusive to me. If you've read something compelling about the symbolism of the almond tree and kind of the structure of the menorah, I'd be really interested. And I'm talking about not the modern menorahs, but specifically the tabernacle menorah. I'd be interested in reading it. I've read a number of different kind of explanations as to possible symbols or what historical commentators have suggested. And I mean, I can see it, but I don't see how it has to mean that, how it, you know, really is, you know, they don't give compelling reasons. So some of these symbols include the symbol of life. You know, the olive tree was the first to blossom in spring. And so Yahweh is a source of life to the Israelites. Definitely true, but I don't think that really has to mean that. Another possibility is the revelation of truth, of course, because it's providing light in this small area. You know, that's pretty basic, but again, it doesn't have to go there. And then another one that I found interesting, I hadn't read before today, was that it's a callback to Yahweh's initiation of his rescue plan for Israel, you know, with Moses and the burning bush. So we have in this menorah here, this thing fashioned to look like a plant that is burning, but not being consumed, you know. So I found that interesting, and it seemed thematically, I guess, to be the strongest and to fit. But I don't see why it has to mean that. Why that would have been obvious? Because to my knowledge, the bush that Moses encountered was not identified as an olive bush. And in any case, I think this is the sense I got was that this is patterned after the almond tree, which are, as I understand, not even related as plants, even though they have obvious, you know, superficial similarities. So anyway, I found all these things interesting, but not unquestionable. So I'd be interested in anything you might run into on that topic. Okay, so now that we've looked at the basic materials used for its construction and some of the symbols represented in the smaller details, we'll zoom out next time with an overview of the general structure of the tabernacle and then examine its use, namely that of the sacrifices and the offerings that are performed in the tabernacle. And that's kind of what all this has been building up to, which I'm really looking forward to kind of digging into again and then sharing with you guys. For now, what I take from this, what we've looked at today, is a continued affirmation of both God's unchanging, untiring, and his untiring love, and his equally perfect and untiring justice. In all of this, my impression is that God seems to be saying to Israel, I want to be near you. I want you to be near me. But for now, there are some issues between us that need to be dealt with, that keep us from really being truly close. Just like any relationship that you've had where you might love this person, but right now there's a little bit of friction that hasn't been dealt with between you, or maybe a lot of friction, you know, and your love for them is so strong that it's not going to ultimately drive you apart. You're still committed to them, but that relationship, it's just, you know, it's just not intimate, you know. You don't love them any less, but you just can't have that intimacy because there's junk between you that hasn't been resolved yet. And that's what I see going on in this explanation of the tabernacle. Now, as a geek, I love exploring concepts that are strange and alien to me, and it doesn't get any more strange and alien than God. But sometimes when I spend a lot of time thinking about his immense, perfect, which, you know, I can't even wrap my head. Perfect is just an abstract concept. We don't really know what perfect is. But when I try to spend time thinking about this immense, perfect, whatever that is, and unfathomably other being, I feel distanced from him. My reaction is either to just kind of disconnect emotionally and then just kind of analyze God on a cold, intellectual, conceptual level, or if I stay engaged emotionally as I'm contemplating just how other he is compared to me, I become momentarily discouraged as I realize just how different he is from me, just how wide the gulf is from us, just in terms of what we are like, just in terms of our intelligence, complexity, our capacity for whatever, and then morally, the gap that's between us. And I just think to myself, how can he and I possibly have any kind of relationship? You know, we've got nothing in common, to put it recklessly. But if I'm thinking correctly, my mind then moves quickly to who Jesus is and what he has done. Ephesians chapter 2, 11 through 13 in the ESV reads, "Therefore remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh, called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision, which is made in the flesh by hands, remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ." And Ephesians 2, 22, just a little bit later, same book, same chapter, says, "In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit." Now, the context there is talking about, you know, the unification of Jews and Gentiles, but I think you can see the application for what I'm talking about here. The sacrifice of Jesus, which makes the ineffective sacrifices of the old covenant obsolete, has enabled me to not only be near to God, but for him to actually dwell inside of me. If you've placed the fate of your eternal existence in the hands of Jesus, well, then you can sit back and marvel at the freaking mind-blowing nature of Yahweh, and at the same time, be thrilled and excited and unafraid at the truth that he no longer dwells with us through a tabernacle. He actually somehow dwells inside of you. Even with all the mess that you and I bring to the table, he dwells in you increasingly, in fact, in increasingly greater ways, maybe I should say, as you pursue life with him. Ephesians 3, 14 through 19, I'll leave you with this, which says, "For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." I want to thank the Game Store Prophets for spending time with me. Guys, go check them out if you haven't yet. Feedback, input, guys, I want to hear from you. Yes, you. Request a review, give me your thoughts, questions, whatever. It all helps me make this show better. Go to spiritblade.net/underground to record a message with your computer. Send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Either one of those would be great. Again, I haven't rehooked up the phone number yet. Haven't really been getting any complaints, so if you really like that option, let me know and I'll get my butt in gear and make that happen. If you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it, both faster and better, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. In fact, this month, well, this actually, it'll be next week sometime probably, that I send out the journal entries for this month to the insiders. I got to the 80% mixing point on two songs this month. Two songs. One of them I still have to record my vocals for, but man, I'm very excited about my pace right now on the songs for Spirit Blade, A World of Shadows. 5 out of 7 songs now are at the 80% mark, which puts me well on my way toward my goal of basically starting my mixing on scenes of the project sometime before Christmas. I mean, that is so doable. I'm so freaking excited. And if you want to hear kind of like how those scenes shape up, how the songs are shaping up, stuff like that, I'm sending all these kind of rough mixes and works in progress to the insiders. And I'll be starting doing that with scenes. So if you want, I suppose over time, you could kind of put together your own patchwork version of Spirit Blade, A World of Shadows, since I usually mix in chronological order. You could get this serialized, slightly crappy version since the mix will not be refined and complete. Boy, that's really enticing, Pater. Tell us more. But anyway, if you kind of want to know the nuts and bolts of the creative process, the ups and downs of this whole adventure of mine of trying to run this company when I have no idea what I'm doing in terms of business, in terms of marketing, I'm just a complete idiot. I think I have a few neat creative ideas, and I think I have a vision that's worth having. But man, the rest is crazy adventure time. So if you want to be get a front row seat to be on that ride with me, again, go over to spiritblade.net/donate for more information about the Spirit Blade Insider Program. I want to remind you guys that there are open roles, ways that you can get involved in shaping the future of Christian Geek Central. Go to christiangeekcentral.com, click on About CGC, and scroll down to where it says how you can get involved, and you can find out about all the ways that you could potentially get involved with Christian Geek Central, and like I said, really shape the even parts of the vision of that. I mean, I my goal is for this thing to just be ultimately shaped by other people. I'm just going to provide kind of like the, I guess, the foundation philosophically of, you know, but as far as like what this crazy animal looks like, there are some basics, you know, community and content and stuff like that, and a broad appeal to Christian geeks. But beyond that, I am totally interested in what you might bring to the table as we decide what this crazy thing is going to become. I'm already excited about where it's at now, but I'm excited to continue to propel it forward, and for that, I need you to get involved. So again, ChristianGeekCentral.com, click on About CGC, and scroll down to how you can get involved for more information. As far as this podcast goes, just a heads up, I'm anticipating some possible inconsistencies in my schedule throughout the month of October. Right now, it doesn't appear as though the podcast schedule will be interrupted, although that is still a possibility. More likely is the chance that one or more In Search of Truth segments will be missing from the podcast in October. The reason for this, unlike you know, other stuff like where I'm taking, you know, going off grid or whatever, I think some of that will be in the mix as well, going off grid. But the main reason for that is that my younger sister and her family are visiting home for most of October. Her husband is serving as a missionary in Rwanda, and the next time we see them after October is probably going to be over a year and a half from now. No, actually, I got to amend that. It's going to be about exactly a year from now. Still, a really sickeningly long time for me. So if opportunity arises to drop work in favor of time with my family, I'm going to have to grab it. But thank you for your patience and understanding. I guess I'm kind of assuming that on your part. I'm going to think the best of you right now and just assume your patience and understanding. So thank you for that in advance. As I said, however, the interruptions to the podcast, probably going to be minimal. Having said that, if you'd like to submit an In Search of Truth segment, if you've ever thought about that, if you've done it before, you'd like to do it again, or you want to submit something else to kind of fit in its place, I'd be very interested to hear from you, especially right now. On the more positive side of upcoming stuff, I'm very excited for the coming months of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. The summer and fall are big seasons for tabletop game conventions and product releases, as some of you tabletop gamers might know. So tabletop gaming will get some more focus on the podcast over the next few months. We've already kind of started that with some tabletop gaming related interviews, which is going to continue for a few more weeks with some interesting folks I think you will enjoy getting to know. And although I haven't talked about them much, I've been playing a number of board games in recent months, and soon I will be, actually next weekend, the podcast will still go up, but next weekend I'm going to be attending a local game convention. It's about 2.5 hours from where I live, where I hope to try some new games. All of these experiences I plan to share with you, so if you've never been to a con or a local con, but you're kind of curious or you just kind of want to scratch that itch, I'll try to record some stuff on the fly to kind of give you a little bit of a vicarious con experience. So in the coming months, you can hopefully look forward to my reviews and thoughts regarding, well, let me just go down the list here. D&D Next, Wizards of the Coast's long in development reimagining of the Dungeons & Dragons RPG. I'm going to be a part of a demo/playtest session. Wizards of the Coast has been doing these for, I want to say, like a year or two now. They're doing just tons of playtesting with fans of Dungeons & Dragons and others, and getting feedback and stuff. They're really wanting this thing to be, you know, like the best of both worlds, accessible to new and casual players, but also scratching the itch for hardcore, you know, classic D&D players. So anyway, I'm going to be part of one of those many playtest sessions that are being held at stores and cons all over the U.S. And I'm more than a little curious about how this new take on the game is currently shaping up. So I look forward to kind of sharing that experience with you. Also, Pathfinder the Adventure Card Game, a distillation of the fantasy RPG experience streamlined into a card game format. Several games have tried to do this with varying degrees of success. How close is Pathfinder to hitting the target? I can already tell you it's a fun game, but as far as like how it hits that target of simulating an RPG, you're going to have to wait for my review. Merchant of Venus, the two games in one box release from Fantasy Flight Games, which I've owned for maybe 9 months, 6 months, something like that. My focus when I do a review is going to be on the classic version included in the game. I'm going to answer the question, can a sci-fi space game be any fun when there's no combat? And when the object of the game is to simply buy and sell and make the most money? We'll see. And then Agricola, the game about farming. Boring as dirt, right? Or is there something surprisingly fun here for the fan of medieval fantasy? Plus, my quest for the ultimate dungeon crawl. I did an episode on this topic about a year ago, around the same time when I was coming off of some local con experiences and just trying to sort this out. I've tried Descent, guys. I was a big fan of Descent for years and years. Descent 2.0, I'll give my thoughts on that. Thunderstone, Hero Quest, which I was a fan of for even longer than Descent, and more recently I've been trying some new variants with it. Also a board game variant of classic D&D, as well as the Castle Ravenloft series of Dungeons & Dragons board games. And finally now, Pathfinder the Adventure card game. I just want that ultimate dungeon crawl experience without all the crazy prep and time commitment of an actual RPG. I think I said actional. Is that a word? Somebody get on that. Actional. If it is, I want to use that from now on. I just have to know what it means. Anyway, some of these games have just excited me for months, for years, but eventually lost my interest for one reason or another. Others have fallen flat on their faces. Is there even one among them that will finally be the rich, long-lasting dungeon crawl experience I've been seeking for the last 2 years, ever since Descent 1.0 suddenly became grindy and unplayable for me? Actually, I shouldn't say 1.0, because I was playing Road to Legend, which is all the big campaign stuff. But either version of the game is just unplayable for me now. That just ultimately the mechanics and the whole process just got really grindy and samey. So, has that quest finally come to its conclusion, or does my quest for the ultimate dungeon crawl sadly continue? Well, we're going to find out. All this and more, of course, as tabletop games begin to get an increased focus this fall on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. So if you're into that kind of geekery, stay tuned. The fun is just getting started. Check out the other shows, guys, on the Christian Geek Central Network, like Strangers and Aliens and The Untold Podcast. This month on The Untold Podcast, when an ancient worm is unearthed by the people of Darrow, only an unlikely and unarmed hero can rescue the citizen trapped deep inside the nearby caverns. You can get more information about the network and at Reed Pater Reed. You can get more information about the podcasts of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com. All right, guys, next week, if God wants it to happen, I'm going to talk about why I'm leaving comic books behind. Many of you know I'm a huge, hardcore comic book fan, have been for years. I'm going to release a video soon of my office so you guys can kind of see my workspace, my recording space, and all that kind of stuff. I can't remember if I've released one before, but this will be an updated one. I've got comic books all over my walls, and I mean, it's like practically wallpaper. They're hanging up everywhere. I'm a huge, huge comic book nerd, but I am now leaving comic books behind, and I'm going to talk about why next week, and also have an interview to share with you with the host of the Theology Gaming Podcast. Till then, thanks so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll continue to read. I hope you have a great week, and I really mean that. Even though like I'm reading this every week, I really do hope that you guys have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue, as always, to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Friends and with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.